This is Mentor Talk with Jerry Phillips, your Sunday morning community radio magazine, bringing communities and people together.
And it's First Sunday, August 1st, 2004. And with First Sunday, it's time for our First Sunday Politics. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, the Verizon wireless system. Give us a call, absolutely free call on Verizon. And if you got your hair up because the Democrats didn't say what you wanted to hear, give us a call, let us know about it. And if your hair is up because the Republicans have their turn at the end of the month, give us a call because we'll be talking about that. But we'll be talking about a lot of things as we get into our First Sunday Politics on Metro Talk. We have with us Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, along with Jim Pomeroy, Republican, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, and Scott McLaurity. Scott McLaurity, right?
Right.
Scott McLaurity, who is filling in for Eric Mickelson. Scott is with the Green Party, and thank you very much for being with us, Scott.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Let's get started because there's a lot to cover here. First, the opening comments I'll send over to you, Patrice, in all fairness. John Kerry's performance, there are those who say it came off surprisingly. There are those who say he was really great. And then there are those who say, come on, this was a big show.
Thank you, Jerry. I would say
don't thank me for John Kerry.
Thank you for opening with John Kerry this morning, because I would say this was an excellent convention. The Democrats were more united than they've been in a long time. There was a consistent message. Kerry opened his campaign opened the season with a campaign based on hope and strength, both at home and abroad. His speech was excellent. I say it appealed to a broad base, both Democrats and Independents. And I would also venture to say many Republicans were taken in by that speech and convinced that John Kerry is the one to be the next president of the United States.
Scott, oh my goodness. Scott, do you think he scored?
You know, I think he made a good impression, but I think the problem with the Democrats right now, and with Mr. Kerry in particular, is that they've retreated from so many issues. Mr. Kerry did a good presentation, but he tends to talk in vague terms. He talks about health care, but the Democrats have retreated from single-payer national health insurance quite a while ago, and that's solutions like that are the only real solutions. And I think a lot of Americans are beginning to get really frustrated with the Democrats because they don't represent a viable, a real strong alternative to the Republicans. This was a Republican light convention.
Is the Bush campaign challenged more, and what will the Republicans have to do to equate to the momentum that the Dems created? Jim?
Well, the Democrats were expecting a 15% bounce out of this convention, and they got about half of that. I'll agree. This was Republican light. They realized that in order to try to be elected, they had to dress up nice, they had to pretend to be Republicans, and they had to talk about conservative issues. I'm not sure the pressure on them is going to hold through the campaign, and the ugly liberal head is going to poke through. So Kerry did not get what he needed out of this convention, and we have the Republican convention coming up.
Was the big security stage really necessary, Nicholas?
I actually saw some film outside the $10 million taxpayer-funded boondoggle of the party that we funded. They had this little free speech zone for the protesters with concertina wire and jersey walls. And there was, I think the only people who were in it, there's a drunk Red Sox fan yelling.
That's not true. I know people that were in it, and they weren't drunk.
Were they Red Sox fans?
Well, I don't. There were a lot of people from Massachusetts there, but there were protesters there. But
they pushed them off to the side because supposedly they're dangerous. The Democratic convention, it was just everyone was in lockstep, and I thought I was watching a Republican convention too. I mean, there were more veterans and more mentions of John Kerry's military service. Basically, he's offering us no alternative. It's like, I'm the better war president. I'm going to get us into a war, but different. And I think the American people are ready for some fresh ideas.
Now, John Kerry is not getting us into a war, but better. John Kerry is inheriting a war, an irresponsible war,
with
that
no
the Republicans
plan to get out.
Well,
got us into.
That he voted for and that his running mate voted for and that both of them spoke out in favor of and President Clinton spoke out in favor of. So this was a bipartisan and, I believe, necessary war effort.
And based on faulty information generated by the
Clinton John Kerry voted for and that John Kerry refused to even go in to they had all this information over in the Senate for the members to look at. He never even went to look at the information.
Are we so sure that George Bush looked at the information then, too, our commander-in-chief?
Let's also remember that Mr. Kerry wasn't just duped into supporting a war based on faulty information. When he voted to hand over war powers to the White House, he joined most of the rest of Congress and subverted the U.S. Constitution, which makes it very clear that Congress possesses the power to declare war.
Well, they did. The Congress gave him. You're right.
Congress gave him the authority,
and both John Kerry and John Edwards voted and spoke out proudly
in favor of this war. The Green Party voted on a resolution that saying that Mr. Bush should be impeached. And you could make a strong argument that a lot of Congress members could be impeached based on that vote too.
Yeah, I think I don't pay my congressman to basically go to Washington and go, you know, deciding whether or not we get into a war, it's a little too much heavy lifting for me. I'm just going to vote for some declaration that says, let the president do whatever it is that he has to do. I got to go campaign.
Okay, let's talk about what kind of war the president chose to wage and whether John Kerry would have taken that path, and absolutely not.
We don't know because he gave it up. He wasn't even there.
Right.
He wasn't even there.
He wasn't even there. At the time, though, the Congress voted to give the president power to go against Iraq. However, the president's the one that decided to go to war based on faulty information, without an international coalition, without a plan to get out of Iraq,
and has implemented a really irresponsible... So what we're saying is that these are varying opinions from our panelists here.
You can tell.
Excuse me, you're walking on the host's line now. Right? Excuse me. Anyway, our panelists include Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Republican Jim Pomeroy, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, and our visiting guest this month is Scott Malotti, who is with the Green Party. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. My lines are open. I'd like to hear from you about what you think that you've heard so far from our panelists about the Democratic convention coming up. Moving to agenda item number one. The Washington Post yesterday in the national news with big headlines reported that the White House predicts the 2004 deficit of $445 billion, the biggest ever. The spring economy slowed sharply while we're hearing the president say that there's a rebounding, and we're also hearing certain economists around bipartisan economists around the country saying that the economy is on the upswing. What about this, Jim Pomeroy?
Well, the economy is on the upswing, and it's coming back just as President Bush said it would, and the tax cuts have been the spur for that. And if we hadn't had 9/11, we'd have an even stronger economy. But after the body blow of 9/11, for us to come back relatively quickly, I think shows the strength of the president's leadership.
Let me break this down in real simple terms. Basically, what the president has done, it's like you get a $100 a week raise at your job, and obviously you're making more money, but then you turn around and you spend $1,000 a week on new credit cards. So I don't care how fast the economy rebounds, as long as we have a president who is fiscally irresponsible, and both parties in Congress backing him up at every step of the way with tax increases to basically, these are backdoor tax increases. They're spending the money before they tax us for it, so they can tax us for it later after there's interest added.
Let me ask you, Patrice, with a $445 billion deficit, biggest ever, they say that Bill Clinton corrected that deficit coming out of the Bush days, the Danny Bush and the Ronald Reagan days. But now my question is, how can John Kerry do something about this deficit going into if he does become president?
Well, it's... You know, the deficit is an enormous problem. And not only do we have a $450 billion deficit, it is $800 billion greater than what was forecasted in 2001 for this year. Okay, so we are double the deficit that, really quadruple the deficit that was forecasted.
Well, that's a factor of 9/11.
Part of it's a factor of 9/11. If you look at the numbers, though, over one quarter of it is due to war spending for an unnecessary war that we were brought into against an enemy that didn't attack us. Okay. We also have policies entered into by the Bush administration. For example, just yesterday, there was a article in the paper that the Fissile Material Cutoff Treaty, which is now being presented at the UN, so that we can do inspections to be sure that there's no uranium and plutonium being developed in rogue nations. Okay? Inspection worked in Iraq. This is what we learned. Our policy of containment worked. We went in there. There were no weapons of mass destruction, okay, because inspection worked. We could have inspected Iraq at $2 million a year for 20 years and had no weapons of mass destruction. We could do the same thing for nuclear nonproliferation, and the administration will not do it.
So my question is, how is this going to reduce this deficit we have of $445 billion if Kerry gets in the White House?
Well, Kerry will bring
That's my question.
Kerry will bring in troops through the United Nations. He'll build international coalitions. We'll be able to reduce our war spending, and that'll help immediately with the deficit.
301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. And if your hair is up like mine is up because of all of these politicians and parties here at the table, give us a call. 301-230-0980, #980 in Verizon. Scott Malotti is with us. He's from the Green Party, Democrat Patrice McKinney, Republican Jim Pomeroy, and Libertarian Nicholas Sawalk. 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon. Lines open to what you think and to voice your opinion. Let me talk to you, Scott. Everybody else, this is between you and myself. Nobody else has to hear this. Between you and myself, buddy. Is Ralph Nader a squeeze out? Will he quit the race because of the lack of state ballot listings? And right now, the latest Newsweek polls show that he only has 3%, if anything.
Well, you know what? First of all, I need to clarify something. Mr. Nader is not the Green Party candidate. Mr. Nader is running as an independent. At the Green Party convention last month, actually a little bit more than a month ago now, and took place in Milwaukee, the Green Party nominated David Cobb and Pat LaMarche, who are Green Party members, unlike Mr. Nader. I don't know what Mr. Nader is going to decide. I think Ralph is determined to stay the course and stay in it all the way up until November. I think he'll probably be on somewhere between 15 and 25.
What happened to Ralph Nader and the Green Party? Did they kick him out or what?
Well, Ralph was never a member of the Green Party, and I think
On a Green Party ticket.
In 2000, yes. And I think the Green Party this year were, a lot of Green Party members were distressed that he was running as an independent and not as, because he declined to accept the Green Party nomination. He said that pretty early on. So Greens decided to go with a candidate who is a real party member and was going to campaign nationally and support Green Party candidates, build a party.
Okay. 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon. Here in D.C., we're talking politics right here on Metro Talk from Big 100.3 and Sports Talk 980 in Manassas. Pat's on the line. Good morning, Pat.
Hey, good morning, Jerry. Hey, I just want to comment on the the intelligence and the defense. And it seems that we've got a clear-cut issue between the two candidates here, John Kerry and President Bush. What you've got is John Kerry said at the convention there that any attack on the United States soil would be met with the strongest possible response. And we've got examples here now. We've got Pearl Harbor, we've got 9-1-1 where we've gotten attacked and we didn't have the intelligence and we were brought into wars. We also have the example here now of Iraq where we had some faulty intelligence and we went into war beforehand. So we've got the John Kerry principle of responding to an attack, or we've got the President Bush principle of preemptive action where you go in. We're never going to have 100% perfect intelligence, and I think the American people have to decide which way they want to go. Are we willing to go out on some less than perfect intelligence and go in and make these commitments into a war, or are we going to wait until we get the attack and then simply respond to it? So it seems to me those are the clear-cut distinctions between the two of them in their platforms.
Hold on the line, Pat. Let's go to Patrice and then to Scott.
And I agree with Pat. And John Kerry has said we'll never go to war unless we absolutely have to. And I would say that is really the issue here. We did not have to go to war in Iraq. And I think that we can trust that John Kerry would have the sensitivity to wage wars that we are compelled to go into rather than voluntary preemptive wars.
That's right, Patrice. But does that mean we have to wait for another attack such as the Pearl Harbor or 9-1-1 until we're going to go into war.
Absolutely not. But if we don't have any credible evidence that the person that we're attacking, the country that we're attacking, is actually an enemy country, there was absolutely
no... You don't think Iraq was an enemy country?
Absolutely not. There were no weapons of mass destruction.
Well, we should roll up our borders and forget it. There aren't any enemies out there.
Iraq was its own worst enemy. Iraq was its own worst enemy.
We don't have the right to go to war based on a non-immediate threat. It is against the U.S. Constitution. It's against the Geneva Convention.
No, it's not.
Absolutely.
Where in the Constitution does it say we have to wait till
the defense of U.S. borders?
One at a time, folks.
Hey, we can all sing
together.
Let me get back in here. Let me just ask a question. The question now is to find what is an immediate threat. You know, intelligence is never going to be perfect.
This was not faulty intelligence. This was fraudulence.
It absolutely was fraudulent.
Hold it. Thank you.
Ding, 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 ding.
Pat, will you please continue and conclude?
Yeah, I just like to say, I don't think there was fraudulent intelligence. You know, characterizing President Bush as making up intelligence, we've got President Clinton had that same intelligence. He believed it. President Bush had it. He believed it, and he acted on it. You know, let's get the hype out of here and get down, cut to the issue, stop trying to characterize the two candidates in the worst possible light that you can put them in, and let's just cut down to the actual difference in issue and let the people discuss that.
Thank you very much, Pat. Have a good day, my buddy. Okay, what's your name? Oh, Nicholas. You're a libertarian, right?
I am a libertarian.
Go right ahead, sir.
First of all...
A libertarian ran out of words?
First of all... This war was started on essentially another Gulf of Tonkin, you know, made up, trumped up reason. John Kerry supported going to this war. George Bush supported going to this war. There is an anti-war candidate in this election, and it's the libertarian candidate, Badnarik, who it's his birthday today. So happy birthday, Michael, wherever you are. And what's... I just don't understand. I don't
understand. Let's talk to Ophelia in D.C. Good morning, Ophelia.
I listen to your show every Sunday. This is exciting.
You are so great. Thank you very much.
Only thing the two Democratic candidates seem to have is a head of hair that'll get gray once they get in the White House. Okay, in terms of being taken for granted, why don't minorities, African American, Latino, seniors, can they form coalitions and, you know, really do something with the Republican Party?
Like what? Hello.
Demand some power. Demand, you know, form a power base.
Well,
let me point out. I mean, I appreciate the call. The Democratic Party has been giving lip service to minorities. They want their votes. But what do they do?
You can't say that any longer because there is a new star, a rising star in the Democratic Party that impressed everybody.
One guy.
Well, one guy. What do you want? You only got.
We have Colin Powell. We have Condi Rice. We have people in authority.
Excuse me.
We have Al Sharpton on the other side.
Oh well.
Very qualified to run.
What was that, my dear friend?
Andrew Young is the only person qualified to run for president.
Andrew Young is too old. He did his thing. Come on.
Let's remember also that there are more than just two parties. And as long as there are just people do believe that there are only two parties that can offer them anything, we're stuck in a political rut. We need to think outside the two-party system. Consider the Green Party. Consider what the Green Party has.
Okay, tell me, the Green Party, Nader. I just heard somebody say Nader ran on the Green ticket. Now he's not running on the Green ticket.
In 2000, he ran as a Green.
Yeah, they kicked him out.
Now David Cobb, who's also an anti-war candidate, is the Green Party candidate. And you can find out about David Cobb and the Green Party at gp.org.
Can I say one thing?
Real quick.
When the Democrats get in, it takes more money to do a bureaucracy than when the Republicans are in, okay? And we're having a deficit. We
Amen.
Need to come with some money.
Amen.
Okay?
Thank you, Ophelia.
Thank you.
Love you. Have a good day.
I think it's important to point out that the deficit always goes.
I go to church right after these forms. You know what I mean? I have to.
We'll all need absolution.
We're talking about politics this morning. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 of Verizon Wireless System, along with Scott Mulaughey, who is our special guest sitting in for Eric Nicholson and the Green Party, along with Democrat Patrice McKinney, Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, and Republican Jim Pomeroy. Jim, you are such a great guy. Stu Eisen, good morning.
Jerry, good morning to you and to your guests.
I need your help.
Well, all right.
Turn your radio down, Stu.
No radio.
Oh, no. You're watching us on the internet or what?
No, who knows?
Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, first I got to say, Al Sharpton was probably the best speaker at the convention. I don't care for the man. I don't like the man. But he can orate. And then to have Graham come up underneath him, or underneath him, behind him, whatever, he looked like a deer in the headlights. Now, serious question, though, for your the third-party people who are with you. In your heart of hearts, you know that your candidate at this time cannot win. For most of you, I feel, from what you've said, you would prefer to see George Bush out than anyone else in. Will you, when it comes down to the time, vote for Kerry, knowing that your vote, if you go for your regular candidate, will unfortunately at this time mean nothing?
Okay, before you answer that, folks, I got to ask Stu Eisen. Stu is one of our economists working with Clear Channel Public Affairs here in Washington, and I just have to ask him about this budget thing. I don't mean to cross, but I have to ask, because Stu, you'll be on a couple of Sundays from now, but this will come up again. But what do you think about the $4.45 billion budget? Will this affect this campaign any?
I think if people are going to see it, and it's going to scare them.
Okay. All right. Answer Stu's question.
Well, Stu, first of all, we run candidates for several reasons, not just because we're going to get a candidate at the White House. We run national candidates to build a party and to support our state and local candidates. Also, on top of that, we are, a lot of people, Green Party members are not interested in voting for a choice between two pro-war candidates.
Okay, let's go to the Democrat. Democrat, please.
A vote for the Green Party is a vote for Bush. And it's a vote for the status quo. So if the Green Party wants to see a change, they should vote for John Kerry.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't know Patrice was third party.
We're trying. You know what I mean?
Okay.
A libertarian.
Bush and Kerry agree on the war. They agree on the Patriot Act. They agree on gun control. They agree on expanding entitlements. They agree on irresponsible spending. And so, no, to answer Stu's question, I will not vote for a candidate who is essentially the same. And honestly, I don't have a preference.
Jim,
they both are awful.
Jim Pomeroy, Republican, you got the last word on this one.
What's interesting is, on the issues that are the most controversial, the Democrats are trying to agree with the Republicans, which means they must not be as controversial as they appear. I agree. If you are an anti-war activist, if you don't think that the United States is worth defending no matter what, then yeah, don't vote for the president. But John Kerry voted for the war too, and I support the war. It was the right thing to do, and I'm proud of our president.
This is Metro Talk, and this is First Sunday Politics. 8:30 is the time here on Metro Talk from Big 100.3 WBIG and Sports Talk 980. Jerry Phillips here, of course, with our panelists, including Nicholas Hallwalk, Jim Homily, Patrice McKinney, and Scott Malarty. And the weather people say it's going to be very hot and sticky today. We'll have some rain causing a flood watch up in the western part of Maryland. Temperatures today about 88, maybe 90 degrees in some places. Scattered thunder showers in the afternoon here in Washington. And it's going to be a dry period come Tuesday, 92 degrees hot, but it'll be dry the rest of the week. Let's talk with Dwight in Silver Spring. Good morning, Dwight.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing, Jerry?
Pretty good, my friend. Thanks for calling and saving me.
My question goes out to Patrice. And the question for you, Patrice, is in World War II, the Japanese bombed us at Pearl Harbor. The Germans didn't do anything. So would you have opposed the Allied invasion of Europe against Nazi Germany just because they didn't attack us? That was preemptive.
Well, that was a completely different situation.
No, it's not different. It's the same thing. I mean, President Bush is standing up to evil in our time, just like FDR did. And John Kerry and the Democrats have always been on the wrong side of history. You guys opposed Reagan's buildup. You guys did nothing about Pol Pot. You guys did nothing about Idi Amin and his atrocities. It's always been the Republicans who've stood up to evil in our time.
Well, I appreciate your point of view, and I thank you for your comment. And that's a point that's been brought up by a lot of people. However, our immediate enemy was Al-Qaeda. We were attacked by Al-Qaeda, and we had a responsibility to go after Al-Qaeda and not Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda were not the same person. We were in a war with Al-Qaeda, and to divert our forces and our funding to somebody who had not attacked us and was causing trouble for his own people only at that point, because there were no weapons of mass destruction.
His own people, right? It's okay for Saddam Hussein to torture his own people, right? The rape wounds are gone. So you're saying it's okay if a foreign leader tortures his own people?
There are plenty of bad guys out there. There are plenty of foreign leaders torturing their own people. Look what's going on in Sudan right now. We had a responsibility to go after Al-Qaeda. We still have a responsibility to go
after
Al-Qaeda.
We haven't had another attack since 9/11 in America, and that's because we have beaten them to the punch. We've got them on the run.
We've created an environment in Iraq where Al-Qaeda is reorganizing.
Let me get Scott in on this.
Okay. Let's also remember that Germany had one of the most powerful armies in the world by 1940 and was using it everywhere. Meanwhile, in 2000 and 2003, Iraq was not a threat to the U.S. or to Iraq's own neighbors.
Thank you very much, Dwight. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Pat in Alexandria. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, darling. How are you?
Help me out, Pat.
Darling, you're past help. You're well past help. Really.
Help is on the way.
Well, I don't know.
Did I put that in there? You like that, Patrice?
My question to Patrice is a very simple one, and I suggest if she looks at the Senate voting record, and we hear a gentleman, and I use that word loosely, who said he will be there for the troops, number one, who voted against the Bradley fighting vehicle, who voted against the M1 Abrams, who voted against the F-16 Strike Eagle, who voted against the Patriot missile system, who voted against battle armor for the troops. He's voted against every weapon system since 1988, which worries me. He voted to cut funding of the FBI. He voted to cut funding of the CIA. He voted to cut funding of the NSA. And yet, he votes to increase our money to the UN, which is really doing a whole hell of a lot to help this world out, isn't it? I have some problems with Mr. Bush. I have major problems with Mr. Bush. I have more problems with Mr. Kerry. And frankly, I plan on writing in John McCain. You got to wake up, folks, and smell the coffee. We are not the most powerful nation in the world for any reason other than nobody else has got the money, nobody else has got the people, nobody else has got the economy, nobody else has got the manufacturing. But as far as the rest of it goes, wake up and smell the coffee. Start dealing with everybody as equals and not as second-rate citizens. And by the way, Patrice, we may have knocked the hell out of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, but anybody who thinks there is not going to be another attack on this country is a complete idiot.
I agree with you.
Have a lovely day, darling. I have to go bake cookies to put in a box to mail out.
Cookies?
Don't you? Pat, before you go.
You didn't talk about your boyfriend.
I was
going
to say, this is Jim Parmley, and while I'd love you to vote Republican, and I appreciate your comments on John Kerry.
Just because
I am not a Republican.
I know.
I'm not a Democrat.
I know.
I'm an independent. I haven't been a Republican since then.
And don't be bushing her to win. Don't be bushing her for votes.
I only wanted to ask because you're such a big fan. A big fan here of Nick. I'm surprised she's not voting for the Libertarian.
Republicans, you always step in when you're not supposed to step in.
I'm surprised she's not voting for the Libertarian.
Here you go, a Republican.
Mr. Parmley, I think to make a comment like that shows the level of your ability to have manners.
Sounds like arrogance out of the White House.
Ms. Parmley, that was the usual piece of sarcasm. And sarcasm.
No, it wasn't sarcasm.
Not,
I'm amused. Help
sarcasm.
Is on the way.
You have expressed your support for Libertarian. I'm just saying, I'm surprised you aren't voting Libertarian.
Can we have a gavel-to-gavel thing between Pat and my friend, the Libertarian over here?
Nicholas, have I been unkind to you at any time?
No. I think, actually, Jim, I'm looking at his face. I think he was serious. I was going to ask you why you're writing in McCain and not voting for Badnarik.
Well, basically because I think McCain is the best person out there who's never had an opportunity.
But he's not on your ballot.
Doesn't matter, darling. I can write in anybody.
Yes, you can.
Frankly, I could even write in Donald Duck would be the equivalent of George Bush, but what
Jerry
the hell?
Phillips. Enough, Jerry.
No, I wouldn't do that to Jerry. He's far too nice a person to have to deal with the rest of them.
Pat, I love you and your cookies.
Well, darling, someday I'll send some up to you, but unfortunately I got to be at the post office early tomorrow to get it over to Iraq.
I know. Go ahead.
Take care,
and good luck to your son.
Bye-bye.
Lots of love. Okay, David in Hagerstown. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. I have a question, or I'm going to pose a question to all of them. Back in the late 70s to the mid-80s, Iraq was supplied with over a million tons of chemicals for weapons-grade material. During the six-year war with Iran, they only used about 15% of them, allowing about 10% for degradation, and they've only found 55%. Can any one of them tell me where the rest of it is? Because apparently one of the candidates there turned around and said there was no weapons of mass destruction. It doesn't evaporate.
Okay, thank you very much. Answer to that? Anybody?
I can't actually answer the caller as to where all the weapons are, but it does seem pretty obvious that Saddam Hussein wouldn't want to have them around to get caught with them with the inspectors. And I find it interesting. We did actually give them the weapons. I fully expect that within 10 years, Pakistan will probably do something bad to us.
Okay, we got to get to some local. We got to get to some local politics. But before we do, we're going to go back to the phones. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. Round robin, very quick answers, guys. Here we go. Will the 9/11 commission reports affect the candidates' run to the White House? I'll start with you, Scott, Green Party.
Well, I want to see the 9/11 commission continue. I want to see involvement by family members who are survivors who are affected by the
Libertarian.
I think it's a bipartisan shell game, and the report will have just enough good and bad stuff for both sides that it won't affect
Republica.
You know, I think what the report basically says is under both administrations, Clinton and Bush, sometimes people, if they are motivated enough, they're going to be able to strike you.
All right. And Patrice, Democrat.
I don't think it'll have a great effect on the election because there's a great deal of confusion that's come out of the 9/11 commission report, unfortunately.
Another round-robin question. Quick answers, my friend. Will bin Laden surface before November the 2nd? Will this mean anything to the American voter? Nicholas.
If they can drag him out of a hole, I would imagine that the Bush campaign will get a bit of a boost.
Is he drinking out of the same Coca-Cola bottle in that little hole as Saddam Hussein, Scott?
I don't think that bin Laden has much of anything to do with Saddam Hussein. And he obviously never had anything to do with Saddam Hussein.
Meaning, is he caught already?
Oh.
And being held?
I don't know, but we're all placing bets on it.
Patrice, Democrat.
Unlikely that he's been caught and held.
Oh, okay. Jim Pomeroy, Republican.
Well, the 9/11 report did point out that there were contacts between Al-Qaeda and Iran. Iraq. They just weren't operationally involved in 9/11, but there were contacts between the two terrorist groups.
301-230-0980, pound 980, the Verizon Wireless System. We talk politics first Sunday, and our panelists include Jim Pomeroy, Republican, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, Scott Malotti, who is our fill-in for Eric Mickelson, thank you very much, from Green Party, and Nicholas Sarwak, the Libertarian, and on the line, Rodney in D.C. Good morning, Rodney.
Hey, good morning.
Go right ahead.
I just wanted to say that I'm a 9-year Army veteran, spent most of it in the infantry, and I'm currently a police officer in the Republican. And I'd like to say to Patrice, you and your candidate are way off guard, or way off base, way off base.
How so?
I hope nobody out there in the radio land is believing that junk she's talking about. Saddam Hussein, he was a threat to the United States. He effectively spit in the face of the United Nations during the weapons inspections. Nobody's talking about the fact that he supported terrorism by offering to give money to families whose children participated in the terrorist events and blew themselves up and killed Americans.
Wasn't Saddam Hussein almost an invention of George Bush Sr.?
No, of course not.
Oh, of course not.
I just asked.
No, hold on. That is a charge that people make. When Iran and Iraq were fighting, we backed the lesser of two evils.
After 5 years, I don't remember anything, but I remember a connection. Yes.
Can I gently disagree with the caller?
Thank you very much, caller.
The issue is that Saddam Hussein was not a threat to us. While he may have spat in the face of the United Nations, like, say, North Korea, half a dozen countries in Africa, and Israel, and while he may have supported terrorism against Israel, I have yet to find any credible threat that Saddam Hussein posed to us as a nation. And this idea that we have to get involved in every conflict, I mean...
Absolutely. And
very quickly.
Again, I have to respectfully disagree with the caller. Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. There's no doubt about it. He was evil incarnate. What he did to his people was absolutely unbelievably unconscionable. However, our enemy is Al-Qaeda, and we can't confuse the two.
And let's also remember that money for Al-Qaeda came from a lot of other countries, like Saudi Arabia and possibly Pakistan and Egypt, and that's where the hijackers themselves came from.
All right, let's turn the agenda to local politics. Local politics, is former Governor Doug Wilder a shoe-in for Richmond mayor? And I turn to you, Jim Pomeroy, because you know Virginia like you know the back of your hand, being a good Virginian Republican.
Well, I'll tell you, Doug Wilder, what a long, strange trip it's been. He started off as one of the most liberal members of the Virginia State Senate. He got elected governor, a lieutenant governor, and then governor, became a fairly fiscally responsible governor, and now he's remarkably disappointed and spoken out bravely against Governor Warner, a fellow Democrat, for being a tax-and-spend liberal. And now he is coming in to rescue Richmond. If you want to spend all of our money and increase the big government, you're a liberal.
And what's wrong with being a liberal?
Well, Doug Wilder and I would say, a combined, bipartisan effort, we would both say that big government is bad.
Is there something sinful? I saw this on a soundbite on television last night in the 11 o'clock news. This guy went to that gun show down in Virginia, and he said, thank God no liberals are here. We have all decent people here. I thought that was a stupid statement.
Well, there's something sinful about having a government poke their nose into every aspect of your life and tell you how to live.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about the Republicans.
Let's go back to Doug Wilder. Yeah. That's the topic.
Okay, Doug Wilder. First of all, the notion that there's a rescue mission that needs to take place in Virginia is absolutely unbelievable. Governor Warner essentially rescued Virginia in this past legislative session. If we hadn't passed a responsible budget, we would have completely lost our credit rating.
Oh, absolutely. That's ridiculous. Out of the various credit agencies, only one of them was going to downgrade us slightly, and we'd still have a terrific rating. This was a tax-and-spend steal, power grab from big government liberals, including Governor Warner.
Absolutely
and
wait,
back to Wilder. I think Wilder's going to win that race,
The Republicans voted in favor of that tax package.
About a third of the Republicans voted for it. Two-thirds of the Republicans and our nominee for Governor, Attorney General Jerry Kilgore, voted against it proudly.
This is Metro Talk's First Sunday Politics, and they are the players, Libertarian, Republican, Democrat, and Green Party, Nicholas Sawalk, Jim Parmalee, Patrice McKinney, and Scott Malotti. I'm Jerry Phillips here on WBIG 100.3 FM, as well as WTEM Sports Talk 980, Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C., and this is Metro Talks for Sunday. Right now, let's go back and talk to Mitch in D.C. Mitch, how you doing?
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Mitch, before you go into your question, I know you have a question, but this is our next topic. Okay, I won't be impolite. I'll let you go with your question first. Then I have a question to you.
Okay. I'm sorry this isn't local. It's back to something you were talking about before.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Ms. McKinney said that Mr. Kerry would not engage in preemptive war. Someone else on the panel then said, well, hold it. Are we going to get hit first, Pearl Harbor, 9/11? Are we going to wait until we're attacked? Ms. McKinney's answer was, well, we won't engage in preemptive war on such bad or weak evidence of a threat. My question is, does that mean that preemptive war is okay for John Kerry if there's really good evidence? In other words, does Kerry favor some preemptive wars, but just not this one? I see a waffle.
Okay. First of all, what I would like to say is that it is very difficult to say what's going to happen in the future. Okay, preemptive war has never been the policy of the United States. George Bush has instituted the policy of preemptive war. This is new. Okay, whether in the future we are able to absorb intelligence that will give us absolutely 100% evidence that we are about to be attacked, under those circumstances, would preemptive war be something that John Kerry would advocate? I would say he probably would. We are unable to say exactly what's going to happen in the future, and I'd say stating absolutely 100% no preemptive war, absolutely we have to have a policy of preemptive war, is irresponsible.
Can I help the caller out and remind Patrice that he asked a question, which was whether or not John Kerry would support a preemptive war if there was sufficient intelligence? That was the question. Is preemptive war on the table or off the table for John Kerry?
You know, I don't think that we've absolutely have a...
Waffle.
We cannot
syrup.
Make a statement
butter.
On that.
I'm hungry.
Part of politics is dealing with reality. And reality is something that we cannot predict.
And most politicians are unrealistic.
I think John Kerry will deal with the reality of whatever situation we come up with.
Okay, thank you.
Jerry, can I get some grits with that waffle?
No, you have to be purple hearts. Mitch, I have a question for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're from D.C., right?
Yes.
All right, because that's the next local issue on our agenda here. Although you can talk about national stuff, too. We don't care. Marion Barry is planning to run in D.C. Ward 8, and he's raising a whole lot of ruckus out there about how well he's going to do and beat Sandy Allen, the council member incumbent. But Sandy Allen, the incumbent, has gotten endorsements from the D.C. council. Everybody on the council endorsed her. over 5 endorsements, including the Board of Trade and Marionberry's longtime friend, Reverend Willie Wilson. As a D.C., I'm just asking you, is Barry dreaming? What is the story there?
Well, I don't live in Ward 8, and if the people there want to send him back to the council, that's certainly their prerogative. My view would be he's been there for a while. He was really good. I was less enthused in his later years. Endorsements don't count a whole lot for me, but I think Marion Barry's had his time in office. He should, you know, retire and write op-ed pieces.
Thank you very much, Mitch. That's very, if I could only get the other panelists here to talk like Mitch, you know, concise, right to the point. Mike in Annapolis, good morning.
Good morning, and again, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it. I come from a military family. I've 6 years active duty. I did 17 years in reserves. My dad was a career military man. My son just came back from Iraq in December, and before that, he was deployed to Afghanistan. So I will say I'm neither Republican nor Democrat. I kind of sit back and I'm looking for the man that's going to help me the most, as opposed to the one that's going to hurt me the least. Or the other way around, I guess, is probably the best way to put that. My question is, in looking in terms of the most credible man to put into office, I have a problem when I look at questions that are being raised in terms of a man's position, and he jumps from side to side, and this is neither a support for or a condemnation of Mr. Kerry, but in terms of his war record, and I heard of someone the other day on one of the other talk shows talking about it wasn't important in terms of, you know, what he did and how he did things. In fact, he was on the front line.
Mm-hmm.
Types of things. I find it very, very difficult to find a situation that lends itself to, again, to credibility. When I look at a man who has that kind of war record, and he comes back and he finds fault with not only what happened in terms of what he did there, but what the rest of us did there.
So let me ask you, Mike, for time's sake, what specific question are you asking here? Hey, he didn't have a question. He had a statement.
He wanted to be a panelist.
He wanted to be a panelist, okay. Well, you can send it to Post Office Box, I want to be a panelist. There you go.
But you know what?
I have a question for the Libertarians. I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. Absolutely free call, and I have lines open as we have our last remaining 10 minutes. Want to hear from you on your opinions about local politics or the national issues that we've been discussing in our first Sunday Politics this Sunday, along with Scott Malotti and Patrice McKinney, Jim Pomeli, and Nicholas Sawalk. Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarians ask, and this is coming from the Libertarian Party, Libertarians ask Kerry Edwards to pay for their own convention. Polls show 62% oppose taxpayer subsidy.
Yeah. You know how it works? Is the Libertarian Party, we put on a convention every 2 years, and a bunch of us get together and pick our candidates and stuff. And we're pretty much of the opinion that we don't have the right to tell other people that they have to spend their tax dollars to throw us a big party. But the Democrats and the Republicans appear to be of the opinion that your tax dollars, in the middle of a huge deficit, in the middle of a recovering economy, that they should be able to spend 10 to 20 million of your tax dollars on a gigantic party. And as the poll shows, 62 or 68% of Americans don't feel that that's right, to be able to take tax dollars to throw a big party on the taxpayers' dime.
Well, it says here that
how many percent?
Taxpayers spent some $40 million for staging the event in Boston. Patrice, do you think taxpayers should pick the bill up or not?
Well, what portion of this was picked up by taxpayers, Jerry? I'm a little bit confused about the question here.
$40 million.
$40 million, it says here.
By federal tax dollars?
Yes.
Yeah, federal,
American dollars.
American dollars.
Okay.
I'm only reading what the Libertarians are writing.
Okay.
It's accurate.
It's accurate, he says.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it is, and I haven't read the article, so I really have to...
Let me get... Now, your convention is to come the end of the month. The Republicans
paying for that one, too.
And I think, you know, I mean, it'll be a fine convention. I agree with the Libertarians. I think that the government should get out of funding parties for elections, and that we should get rid of the campaign financing, which the voters, in addition to the poll... When you look at the, which proves our point, when you look at the actual tax returns, where you have the checkoff for presidential campaigns, that has been going down for years. The American public realize that politicians can raise their own money. They don't need money from the government.
Just talk to Chris in Rockville. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, gentlemen and ladies. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. I have a quick question for Patrice. I got the comment and a question. My comment is that I'm hoping that President Bush, when he made the preemptive strike against Iraq, either directly or indirectly, wanted to wage the war with Al-Qaeda. I think Patrice was talking that the war with Iraq had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. I'm hoping that he wanted to wage the war with Al-Qaeda in Iraq, because if you look at all the insurgents, most of them that you hear through news reports are linked somehow to Al-Qaeda. So do we fight the war here in New York or Washington, D.C. or Philadelphia, or do we draw all the Al-Qaeda members to Iraq or Iran or Pakistan mm-hmm. or Afghanistan and fight them there? Which would you rather do? Thanks, guys.
Okay, guys, thank you very much.
That's a really, really good question. And the point here is that Al-Qaeda is a new and different kind of enemy. It's not a geographical enemy, and they kind of are insidious and kind of move where into environments where they're able to grow and operate. And because of the chaos that we've created in Iraq, Al-Qaeda is now very much present in Iraq. Prior to our entering into Iraq, there was no evidence that there was Al-Qaeda. In fact, Saddam Hussein was somebody that was completely an enemy of Al-Qaeda, and he would have done anything he could to keep them out of Iraq.
Absolutely untrue. Absolutely untrue. In fact, they had a lot of terrorists that they were sheltering there. He was funding terrorists. And I know that you seem to think that these terrorists are completely separate from each other, but they work together. The different terrorist groups
That is not true.
Absolutely.
That is not true. The Al-Qaeda operatives that were in Iraq were in a part of Iraq that was not controlled by Saddam Hussein up in the north. But even more
That's untrue. It's a mythology.
That a lot of the insurgents in Iraq are connected with Al-Qaeda. A lot of those insurgents are furious. They're connected with small businesses in Iraq, and they're furious that their businesses are being taken away from them.
Oh, come on.
That has been documented in lots of investigative reports.
So it's the Chamber of Commerce that are running terrorist operations?
Excuse me, you're pretty close to it.
Excuse me, you're pushing my radio off the shelf. Liz in Arlington, good morning. Hello, Liz. Are you there? Liz in Arlington? She's not there.
We scared her away.
You scared Liz. Her radio is falling off the shelf with all of this. Eric in Fairfax, how you doing?
Hey, I got two things I want to bring up. One, on a local scene, I coach boys club football. And what do you guys think about this $5 tax that Fairfax County is putting on each kid to use the fields on the local level? I think that's wrong. It's a tax on, you're taxing kids in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, no one seems to be talking about this illusion of inclusion. If you look at Michael Moore's film, you will see that this war, it doesn't make a difference what color you are, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, whatever. If you're poor, you're going to war. If you're rich, the underlying issue is the issue of class in this society. And everyone keeps calling and saying they have family and, in Iraq. And, we're putting ourselves against each other. And the real issue is the elite here in America, they're not going to war. They're sitting back. Their kids are going to college. And they're sitting back going to the big fundraisers and dinners and supporting Bush.
Well, Jim Pomeroy, you're dying over here to answer.
I would say
Let's take a Fairfax County story first.
Two things. One thing, Pat Tillman turned down a multi-million-dollar contract with the Cardinals to go to war. So much for the rich not going.
I'll tell you that story, honestly.
The man gave the ultimate sacrifice.
He has enough money to do whatever he wants to do.
He chose to go over there and he died for our country.
Just like the Republicans to pick a poster boy.
Right. Come on.
Hold on here. A little respect
what
for
about
Pat Tillman.
Absolutely respect.
Excuse me. What about Fairfax County?
Back to Fairfax County. Jerry Connolly is a Democrat, chairman of the Board of Supervisors, has really been quite the tax and spend liberal recently. He's taxing the kids to play sports. He's raising the property taxes. He's raising cell phone taxes. He's out of control.
We didn't ask for a political agenda. The gentleman asked, do you think it's right that he should tax kids? Not Jerry Connolly, but Fairfax County.
He's the one who did.
Yeah, but it's the Board of Supervisors that's doing this.
Yes.
Come on, Jerry
Connolly. Okay, I will broaden it then. He and the Democrat Board of Supervisors.
Oh, my goodness.
if you're upset with the tax, vote Republican.
Nicholas, what about this? Should the kids be taxed?
The kids shouldn't be taxed to play football. That's ludicrous. And I kind of, we don't need to make this a class issue. It's not a class issue. The issue is, support our troops, bring them home, have them here. And I want to follow up with Patrice because I want to know, in principle, is it right for your party to take the American taxpayers' dollars to pay for your big convention?
All right.
In principle, I want the answer.
Patrice, I would say in principle, from my point of view, absolutely not.
And what about the Republicans?
I think the government should get out of funding political parties.
Hey, guys, we got what do I have, Steve, about 1 minute? 2 minutes. Okay, real quick. I was very, very, coming from the days when I used to, as a kid in high school, I learned a lot about American history and politics watching my television and listening to the radio. This year, the networks pulled out. Yes, we do have cable, but everybody does not have cable. Was it unfair that the American networks let Americans down by not carrying, not necessarily gavel to gavel, but at least a better portion of the election conventions, as well as for the Democrats and Republicans? What about that? And very quickly, we've got to answer. Scott, I'll answer yes or no.
Oh, absolutely. I agree that it was shameful, especially when you consider what they preempt, what they refused to preempt on those shows, these reruns and reality shows.
Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian.
I think that it is good for us to be able to see all the political viewpoints. And
Patrice McKinney, Democrat.
Absolutely. Free TV has an obligation to air these political conventions.
And Jim Pomeli, Republican.
While they have an absolute right to decide to either cover or not cover it, I'm saddened that they haven't covered this more often. This is the most important story of the year. Who's going to be our president?
That's right. And it has a lot to do with our lives. I only just want to say one thing. One network put a comedy show on against one of the most important nights when the speeches were really getting good. It's a shame. We like to laugh, but we cry when it comes to politics. We don't want to watch. Thank you very much, my panelists, Nicholas Sawalk, Jim Pomeli, Patrice McKinney, and Scott Malotti. Thank you, Scott. Come back and see us again. I want to thank those who helped to put it together this morning. Steve Solomon, our technical producer. Carolina Restrepo is our researcher. Shaheen, public affairs assistant, written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is a WBIG Big 100.3 and Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. Next week, don't forget Doctor's Call, Elections 2004, and Financial Fitness. We'll have it all coming up. Till that time, my friend, enjoy yourself. Live life. Much peace and much love.